Craig.
Yeah, I feel like I should be singing some country song or something.
Like some song where you lost your wife and you lost your house and you lost your dog and your truck broke down and...
Yeah. Or just, yeah. I don't have one, though. I looked up some songs and then I kind of forgot about it for all day. And then, yeah, so I'm sorry if you don't get to hear my beautiful singing voice tonight. but this is Podcast Versus Everyone. I'm Nick Powers. With me is Jeff Neusser.
Yeah. Do I don't know, man. Do I sound sufficiently bummed out? I'm trying to make sure my bummer is coming through the microphone.
You sound bummed out for sure.
I just spent the last hour working on my Monday column, so that was really good for bumming me out.
Yeah, it's we were talking about it a bit after the game, like the whole like it, this one's kind of a bummer because you're suddenly realizing that maybe the program is not as infallible as we thought it was.
Yeah.
You're kind of realizing that, you know, the whole like 7 wins is not a guarantee anymore. And we kind of talked about for the season that, 6 or 7 wins would be a disappointment. And now we're trying to figure out how to get to bowl eligibility.
Dude, 6, how hard would we be celebrating 6?
Oh yeah, it'd feel like in 2015 when they got to 6.
If we can get to 6, we're going to be super excited.
Yeah, absolutely. 2015, 2013, 13, like those we got really excited those years cuz they were still rare occurrences.
Right.
And now we're just like, gosh, man, like win those home games, please.
Yeah. I mean, that's basically it. I mean, you're looking at the schedule and we'll get to this plenty, I'm sure, but you know, I mean, you look at 6 games left, you got to get 3, and man, like all of a sudden it just gets really, really hard to convince yourself that there's 3 in there. Not that 3 is impossible or anything like that, but you know, I mean, there's the 3 that you expect them to get are this weekend against Colorado. But it's the home games, right? Colorado, Oregon State, and Stanford. And it's like, well, you know, Oregon State's offense is pretty damn good at this point. And if people don't know that, people should probably get wise to that. That so Jonathan Colorado. Smith has put together an actual offense down there. And that just so happens to coincide with our team's weakness. And then, you know, you got Stanford and, you know, Stanford's not rolling over at this point. So, you know, I mean, yeah, it's, you go from being very, very confident to, you know, pretty, you know, I don't know if I'm pessimistic, maybe I'm realistic. I don't know, but it's like you go from feeling very, very good to feeling not very good here pretty quick. And, you know, one thing that, you know, when we were chatting online, you know, they sort of mentioned was, you know, the last 2 games, you know, I could kind of make excuse. I mean, UCLA was so fluky and, you know, you had all the fumbles and everything, you know, just all the crazy stuff. Right. And then Utah, you could say, oh, well, sometimes you just get whipped by a better team and that happens. But this one was like, you know, you can't convince me that Arizona State's a better team, at least not by any measurable amount, you know, and you had plenty of chances to win it and, you know, you didn't. And, yeah, you know,
we got spoiled a bit last year. It seemed like,
yeah,
with the exception of one game, like if the Cougs were in the game in the fourth, they were going to come out with the win. And yeah, that just didn't happen. You know, they obviously had their chance at the end to punch it in for a touchdown.
Yep.
And opted for a field goal.
Which we all knew was the wrong decision. Like, we were all just like...
Well, once they made it 34-31, there was, I think, 2:40 left or so.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if it's under a minute or something, okay. But 2:40?
No. They had plenty of time. Arizona State had plenty of time to move the ball down the field. Especially how they've been getting chunk plays, how their receivers have been beating particularly one of our cornerbacks all day long. You know, your only hope was that they just scored really quickly, which they did not. They took it down pretty well.
Took 2 whole minutes.
they to took do it, it all down to, you know, 30 seconds. And so it was just desperation mode for WSU when they got the ball back, and that didn't work out. And, but man, it started, you know, it started really well. They started out 10-0. It was a bummer that it wasn't 14-0, but the offense was looking good. The defense was getting a couple stops, and you thought, hey, maybe what we were talking about on the preview podcast is that, like, these guys just, you know, they haven't lost three in a row in a long time. Just seems like they're going to bounce back. And for a while it did. It looked like they were going to.
Yeah, but they did. They played very hard out of the gate. They did exactly what we wanted.
And it was 17-7 with about 2.5 minutes left in the second quarter.
Yep.
And then they let Arizona State get 10 points in the final 2 minutes. And all of a sudden the game is completely different. And Arizona State takes the lead. Of course, WSU comes back. That was impressive. It felt like another spiraling thing. ASU scored a bunch of points in a very limited amount of time. But they came back and they got a couple stops. They got a couple touchdowns. They had the lead going in the fourth quarter. And then I think that defense just couldn't hold up, and the offense just didn't score enough points. So they were at 31 going in the fourth, and they had a possession with roughly 5 minutes left, you know, around 5 minutes left, where they started the ball on the ASU 34. And all they could get was 3 points out of that. And that, I think we were all, like we said, we were all convinced it was over at that point.
Yeah.
Jaden Williams is athletic and gifted. And he kind of was given free rein on, you know, he could run the offense a different way. They weren't pounding the ball. Of course, they did pick up a fourth and two when everyone knew that they were going to hand the ball up the middle. And the Cougs hit them, but couldn't tackle them. But I don't know. Like, even on that fourth and two, I'm like, they're not going to stop them. Like, you're like, please just, you know, maybe they'll pass the ball and they'll be like an incomplete pass. You're just hoping they don't run the ball up the middle, which they
do. Well, what really happened, I mean, is that it was pretty much exactly what we talked about in the preview podcast on Friday, which is that, you know, this game was going to go probably one of two directions. It was either going to, you know, the Cougs were going to win going away, or Arizona State was going to win a close one. And it was, you know, and sure enough, Arizona State wins the close one. And the frustrating part is that it felt like, you know, the Cougars had the chance to win going away early. So when you've got a change in defensive coordinator, right, you do have somewhat of an element of surprise. For maybe a quarter and a half, right? And so, you know, you come out, you got different personnel, you run some different schemes. I mean, they even ran, as far as I could tell, they only did it one time, but on an obvious passing situation, they ran what was similar to like a Green Bay Packers, I think they used to call it like a NASCAR situation or whatever, but it was, you know, there was basically like no linemen. And they had five guys standing up, and, you know, so they were doing some things that were confusing ASU early on. That was part of the situation early where, you know, they, on three of Arizona State's first four drives, you know, we caused them to punt. And, you know, outside of the one drive that was 8 for 73, these were the other three drives, 3 for 2 yards, 6 for 18 yards, and 6 for 29 yards. You know, those were the three other drives out of the first four. And you're looking at that going, this is great. I mean, I don't know if it's going to hold up, but this is exactly what you would want. And the problem was that we didn't quite, you know, take as much of advantage as we needed to. You had the drive that ended with a field goal on the, you know, the second drive. You had, you know, a punt, you know, three play minus 2 yard drive, which, I mean, you know, sometimes those happen, but, you know, and then you come back with a TD and it's like, okay, so now you're up 17-7, you're feeling good. You got the ball back, you know, you're driving a little bit, and then you hit, you know, fourth and three from your own 38, and it's 17-7, and Leach falls into, you know, the trap, which is thinking, okay, well, this is my defense has got this, you know, they're playing great. And it's like,
which they had went from on their very first drive of the game, they went for it on their own, 42?
Right.
From the, in like a similar 4th and 2.
Yep. Yep. And with, you know, 2.5 minutes to go, he goes, I think I'll punt. And you're just like, fuck. We all know how this is going to turn out. Now, did we know it was going to happen in one damn play? You know, no, but still it was like, I guess it was the second play. So 2 plays, right? But it was 186-yard reception, right? So, I mean, we didn't know that was going to happen, and I'm not, but you know, you can vouch for this. As soon as we decided to punt, I was like, that's a mistake. ASU is going to score and we've missed our chance, you know? And then, you know, so you can vouch that I wrote that in Slack,
right.
And it's like, and I wasn't the only one. We were just like, this is a mistake because, you know, the defense sure had played okay, but you know, you can't keep counting on that. You know, this is not a unit that's suddenly transformed. I mean, they came out and they had a game plan and they executed it well, and it got them an advantage early, which is exactly what you would want. So you have to take max advantage of that. And we didn't. And then they score a touchdown, and then we get a quick, you know, 3 and out, 26 damn seconds. And then, you know, and sometimes that's the air raid, right? And yep. Then, you know, and then Arizona State comes back with a field goal. And, you know, all of a sudden a game that, you know, you could have potentially gone up 24-7 at some point, you know, in there, you're tied going into half. And, you know, I don't know that I just, like we said on Friday, I don't think a close game was ever to our benefit. And as it turned out, we really only got 4 drives in the second half.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah. And so they went touchdown, touchdown.
Yeah. We scored 17 points on those 4 drives and it wasn't enough.
Yeah. Cause ASU went touchdown, punt, touchdown, punt, touchdown. So they
right.
got 21.
And they got five drives. They got five drives.
We got, I guess five, but the last
not really, not really. It was 30 seconds with no timeouts.
But yeah, another issue is, like that drive you're talking about, 4th and 3. After that, ASU. That's when their offense obviously really got going. But yep. WSU went 31 yards on that drive before that, and that was common all day. They were just starting deep, and they had some really impressive drives in the second half where they went 92 and 84 back to back.
Yeah.
But they had to go 31 yards to punt it if you're starting from the 25 and you go 31 yards, you're definitely going for it on that fourth down. Like there's yep. no doubt about it. You're in their territory. Yep. So being pinned deep, that's the game, honestly, that Herm Edwards plays.
Yep. That second half was Herm Edwards' ball to a T.
Yep. And so, yeah, the only time WSU had a good field position was on that ill-fated field goal drive.
One time they started in Arizona State territory and then couldn't punch it in. But again, that was the same deal. As soon as he went for the field goal, it was like, this is a mistake. You know, like, why are you doing this? You've got a chance to control this. You've got your best unit has a chance to like put the game away, very least make sure you don't lose it in regulation.
Yeah. If you want to lament, not just about what Leach did, but what the players did, I believe that 2 plays before that punt is when Calvin Jackson was wide open in the middle of
yep.
the field with about yep. 30 yards in front of him.
And that was Gordon's Anthony one misfire. Gordon
he does that, you know, he kind of just in order to get the ball out quick, he'll just kind of throw off his back foot and he just
yep.
airmailed it. And that yep. was a bit, that turned out to be pretty big because if he hits yep. Jackson, they're at the very least deep in Arizona State territory.
Yep.
And going for that kind of like kill shot, you know, first half yep. kill shot. It was not to be. Something that you said in the post game chat is talking about how, you know, this offense is really good, but it's not the like unstoppable force that maybe we were hoping it would be.
Right.
Because some of those drives kind of show you that like they're, Arizona State shut down the run for the outside of one 21 yard run for Max Borghi.
Yep.
They were kind of baiting Gordon into, they did on the very first play of the game. They baited Gordon into, a running play because they were playing. They're basically playing. They had like two guys on the line.
Yeah,
they're playing. They're playing like guys, you know, deep off of the ball. So it looks like, you know, they're playing a bunch of guys in coverage. You know, drop an eight or whatever, and then they would immediately like they would just bail straight at the line as soon as because there's not a lot of diversity in the runs that we do.
Right.
So I'm guessing if you can figure out, you know, the few different runs. It'd be fine. And so they tried to combat that with a delay at one point, and it was really awkward play.
Yeah, that didn't really work out so great.
I'm kind of curious that they didn't try the shovel pass.
The shovel pass, yeah.
That seemed like that would have worked pretty well against that. But,
yep.
So most of the runs when the few times, like they only ran the ball like 10 times. So like most of the runs you could tell it was – It came in those situations, and most of them were like early, and then you didn't see them happen as much.
Yeah,
late. I mean, Gordon threw 66 passes. Tells you one thing. That tells you is that this wasn't as explosive. There was some explosive plays. They had one drive where they had back to back 29-yard plays, but there was, you know, this wasn't as explosive as it has been, you know, against UCLA, against Houston. So it was definitely more. But they were still. They were still moving the ball. I mean, overall, that you're talking 34 points on how many possessions?
Like 10.
10.
10, 10 drives.
That's
really what you had. Yeah, yeah. I mean, and I know.
Especially against a decent defense, which I think had some weaknesses that we could. Obviously, Patman and
Aesop
Winston
just
kind of
destroyed that dude over there.
With Jones, I think, just had their way with him. Like that was pretty bad. I think like half of Gordon's yards were over there.
Might have been because there was, I don't know. I mean, as I'm looking here, I could tell you the receptions. Winston and Patman had 20 receptions between the two of them.
Yeah, and Patman had some pretty big ones. And then Winston was just kind of. Automatic, you know, it would be kind of weird. You know, there was a couple times that they just they wouldn't go over there, and you're kind of like, just keep going.
Why?
Because there was two things that were working really well. Whenever Aesop was in single coverage, just quick little slant, he was going to get you whatever you like 5, 10, 15, and then those screens, like quick screens outside, because ASU's committing so many guys to the middle of the field. Those worked really well over and over.
Yeah. It was really interesting. You know, you mentioned how they defended the run and everything, and it was just really interesting to see the strategy because it looked like, oh, this is definitely, you can run against this. Right.
Right.
But then they would just sort of, they did this strategy where, you know, if you handed the ball off, then they just sort of swarmed and, you know, made it very difficult for our linemen to hit their target, basically. You know, they were just having a hard time hitting the person they were supposed to block. But then it also changed into this, you know, when we would pass, they were, you know, really just wanting to clog up the middle of the field and keep, you know, it which was fascinating because like, no, really, as far as I could tell, no other defense has tried to do that to us this year. Actually, it's typically been the other way, right? They've been determined not to let us beat them outside with big plays and then, you know, given up the middle, which is where, you know, Arcanado had done so much damage before he got hurt. ASU was like, no, we're going to like foul up the middle. We're going to make sure that anytime Borgie leaks out to a flat, he can't beat us. And we'll just go ahead and leave our, you know, our outside corners, our corners to do battle with your outside receivers. And, more often than not, you know, the outside receivers won that battle. You know, it was slants all day. It was screens all day. And those guys were super tough. They did a great job. So yeah, it was a really interesting chess match between Leach and the dirty ass defensive coordinator from Arizona State. And, you know, I'd say Leach definitely won that one. Just didn't win the game.
Well, yeah, and you want to, we talk about that for a second. So obviously Gonzalez, the defensive coordinator, Arizona State, before the game made some comments about, you know, we're going to kill the guys, we're going to hurt them, blah, blah, blah. But you really, I mean, it can be rhetoric, and some of the ASU fans that came on our website kind of were like, oh, it's just rhetoric, it's nothing. But really, I mean, I'm stunned that a target.
That there were no targeting fouls?
Because there was at least three that were very obvious. And that were more egregious than a lot of things that we've seen.
Right.
Like being called targeting. The fact that there wasn't even a review.
Right.
Some of these targeting, like it's not like sour grapes about the refs and saying that's why the Cougs lost.
No, not at all.
But it's just like, are we just entering the midpoint of the season where we're going to stop caring about stuff like that? Or is it because you would, you know, you kind of assume that because he made that comment, maybe they'd be more trigger happy on the targeting. Like, since he had this public comment about going after guys, and then they did. And it didn't, and there was nothing, you know?
Yeah. There was one that I remember very distinctly where one of their defenders ran over and tried to target Winston and missed and actually targeted his teammate. Yeah, like launched himself into his teammate's helmet. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Like, they're trying so hard to launch themselves into anything that's moving. It's like, yeah, it was frustrating to watch because, and look, this is the thing, like, you know, it's one thing to say, we want to hit them hard. We want to be physical. We want to make sure that they feel us, et cetera. Right. It's a different thing when you say, and it's not like it was just an offhand comment. He actually invoked language suggesting physical harm three different times. Right. So it's not like he just like one time was like, oh, we want to hurt him, to where you go, well, maybe he just means like, make sure they feel pain, you know, or whatever, like, which of course is defensive coordinator speak for whatever. And it's like, but then, you know, he goes on, yeah, we want to kill them. Like literally we want to drive them into the ground until they don't want to get up. And it's like, I mean, there were Arizona State fans being like, oh, you're just being sensitive. He didn't actually say that. And I'm like, no, that's actually what he said. Like he literally said, it's like this post-fact world that we live in where people are like, well, he didn't really say that. And you're like, the fuck, it's right there. Like he said it, and then, you know, another in sort of a separate quote, he said, he wanted to make sure they were limping off the field, which of course is a little more benign than the other ones, but still is like, you know, with the theme is like, we want them injured. And it's like, yo, like, who says that, you know? Like, it's one thing to say that to your team behind closed doors, but who says that out in public? And, you know, it was clear that they took him seriously and they tried and they failed and, you know, whatever. He looks like a chump and, you know, they end up with the win anyway. And so that's you know, just another reason to be irritated.
I was just thinking after, I'm like, I'm mad that guy's happy.
Shit.
Because his side didn't do their job.
No.
Like WSU was moving.
They got shredded.
Yeah, they got shredded. Like, so you didn't do your job. Your guys were getting away with stuff. They were hurting each other because of what you're teaching them to do, which is exactly what, like, the rules are meant to get people away from teaching. And it was, it was so frustrating that in this, where you've just seen the most delicate of, like, Gray's hits be at least reviewed.
Right.
I've thinking of a few times already.
Particularly if it's a quarterback.
Yeah. See, these were receivers, but they were defenseless receivers. So
right. Like, oh, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, Winston took a hell of a shot on one.
Winston, Bell got rocked pretty hard. There was a very clear forearm to the neck and head area as Patman was catching a ball, and then he somehow, you know, like, didn't fall down and like ran.
Yeah, because he's 6'3", 220 pounds.
Yeah, like he just got clocked on the head and then just like kept going, because I'm pretty sure everyone thought that there was going to be a flag thrown on the field, and they, like,
yeah,
everyone was like, what the hell? It was a pretty weird looking play. But yeah, so there, those three that there was a few other that were iffy too that you would think there would at least be a review on, but not so much. And I wonder
not
if this
so much.
Is just because we're deep in Pac-12 play now, and so we're going to stop doing that. We don't, but or if it was just a unique to this game, and but it's supposed to be the same people calling, doing all the games for targeting, right? So
it's supposed to be, but somebody's got to flag it for review. You know, that's kind of the big thing. I don't think the same person flags them for review. I think it just comes from whoever the replay person is on the game.
Okay.
So, you know, you've got your replay official at the game who would handle any replays. And that person, by the way, was apparently not interested in doing anything for, in that game, because, you know, there was the one where, who was it? Was it Bell or Harris? Harris who scored. And then, they decided just not to review it. And I mean, we ended up scoring on the next play or two anyway, but it was like, yo, he was in like it, and you know, if you wanted to be like, I don't know, that's, well, it's tough to tell. Leech. It's like, at least go through the formal review of it.
Leech called a timeout to give him time.
Which was,
I'd love to have that timeout at the end of the
which game. Was a terrible decision, but whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like, anyway,
but if you call a timeout and then they had a review and you get your timeout back, so Leech is probably like, oh, they're going to review it. And
yeah, I guess. I don't know, man. And it was in
the
weird. Past
that they typically do review it. Like, cause it was when it's that close. But yeah, but I was wondering if part of it was the broadcast, because on that particular
it's possible
play, the broadcast didn't show any replays.
Yeah, and that was and that, one of the worst broadcasts I have seen.
It was a mess. Like, Robinson had no idea what many, like, what there was flags on the play, and they wouldn't even show the ref calling what it was.
We're not even showing the announcement of the flag.
Was a flag. And then Robinson was like, oh, apparently there was a flag. And then,
and
like,
it doesn't take much to confuse Ted Robinson, so let's be honest about that, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, well, and because he goes on some of his little non, like, play-by-play related spiels, and sometimes when he does that, or I think he just loves Yogi so much, and it just, you know,
that too.
But yeah. So they would, there was like at least three times where they're just like, there's a flag on the play, and they're not even, and then they like, as the other play is going, they're like, oh yeah, it was this, and it's like, really, like, what is going on? Like, your whole purpose is to tell me what's going on in this game,
right?
Like, and yeah, that was just, and man, the camera work was difficult.
The whole thing was atrocious
at times.
Yeah, and the whole thing was atrocious.
And Preston has said, because he knows, because his wife works in the industry, is the Pac-12 hires the cheapest labor they could possibly get. They don't hire union labor. They're getting inexperienced folk. So if you're ever watching a Pac-12 football broadcast and you're like, this just doesn't seem as good, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, there's a reason.
So anyways, yeah, we could rant about them forever. let's talk about the defense.
Maybe we should take a quick break before we talk about the defense. What do you think?
Well, now no one's gonna come back.
Yeah. We'll keep talking football. I promise.
Keep talking football, don't worry.
Yeah. All right,
taking a break.
Let's talk some defense.
All right. Let's talk
That's exciting. Defense. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, gosh, you know, for 27 minutes, you were like, okay, they can hold it down enough for WSU to win this game.
Like, yeah.
Like, you knew ASU was going to start scoring at some point, but if you could just get to halftime, like, with any sort of lead, you know, like, then you're feeling like, okay, they can hold it down enough. But man, then you get to the end of the game, and at that point, even though they had just stopped them on the previous one, that was kind of a weird, they were deep in their own territory, and I don't know, they had just stopped them 3-and-out, but at the same time, you were just like, that's not going to happen, not this time.
Nope.
Like, and they didn't. Like, ASU, it took them 10 plays, you know, the fourth down, of course. But you know, there wasn't any doubt that they were going to score.
Yeah.
And you were just, like I said earlier, just hoping they would score early. But yeah, throughout the game, as obviously they started, you talked about kind of some different looks. And they were getting pressure. They had three sacks in the first half, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Which is lots of stunts and twists up front.
Yeah.
Seemed like it didn't seem like overly complicated stuff for the most part, but for whatever reason, ASU wasn't really prepared for it.
Well, yeah. But then once ASU could protect, then they could see that Marcus Strong could not guard Ayuk.
Yeah.
And
Marcus Strong couldn't cover anyone. It wasn't just Ayuk. It was anybody on that. So, like, there was a stretch where they literally weren't even looking to the right side of the field. It was just left, 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 left. And it was like, I guess maybe if we want to take a positive away from it, Daniel Isom had a pretty great game, at least in the sense that they wouldn't even throw his direction. So yeah, we can presume that he was, you know, not doing a terrible job.
Yeah,
they threw his way one time on a fade down the sideline, and he covered it well. And then they, as far as I remember, didn't even go back to that side. So,
well, they, yeah, that's right. They had, on the last drive, they had Hicks in for, and probably a dime package, I'm guessing.
Yeah, because Strong was still on the field, but they had Hicks.
But Hicks was lined up directly on.
Yep, they had Hicks all the way on the outside. It looked like they were trying to be a little more physical and then sort of bracket.
Got a pass breakup.
Yeah, which he did. I mean, it just got to a point. It was like, you know, after the last, you know, time he was burned, we were all just like, he can't play anymore. Like, he should not be on the field. Well, then, of course, the next drive was, you know, here comes Hicks, and they're doing like kind of a bracketing thing out on that side. But it's, you know, I mean, you do those things and you open yourself up to other stuff, right? I mean, that's the touchdown that won the game. You know, you're trying so hard to bracket dudes. And so you can't spy him because you're trying to, like, you know, and run with these guys.
So well. They had done so well.
They contained him pretty much the entire game.
Yeah, the whole game. He had like one, like, 10-yard run. He had a couple other runs, but there was nothing like backbreaking.
No,
but he saw
until then
it was wide open for him. He didn't get touched until the 2-yard line, and he, of course, we'll get another iconic replay of a quarterback diving over the end zone against us. So that same with Cal a couple years ago, but
yeah.
It was that was rough. It was rough because it just once they figured out to go to the left, their left. It was over for the defense, and really what kind of saved us is that honestly a lot is Ayuk. I think they said he had like a stomach bug or something, and he couldn't play every series, and so he wasn't always in there.
Thank God he had to leave the field.
And, yeah, he wasn't always in there, but oh my God, not even playing his full amount of draw like. Snaps.
I know.
What was his final total?
He only had 7 receptions
for 196 yards.
Yeah, that's a pretty good day.
86 yard touchdown. I think he had a 40 some yard touchdown, a 30 some yard touchdown.
Yeah.
The rest of the receivers didn't do a lot. Like, Kyle Williams had 5 of 49. He had a 50 long of
50. And he had like one really nice like a bubble screen kind of thing.
Yeah.
That I think he gained about 20.
One other guy had one catch for 25, and then the rest really weren't getting chunks.
No.
But you know, Ayuk, and I would be interested to see how many of his all of his big plays came when he was lined over on the left.
Yep. Yep.
So,
yeah. the thing that is sort of like stunning, and I kind of threw this out there on Slack, but I don't know that anybody responded, but you know, you just kind of think like, obviously with football, you know, it's such like people like to really sort of reverently refer to the fact that it's sort of the ultimate team game, right? Like you've got 11 guys and you need all 11 guys to do their job. And it's like, you know, while that's true, I do think there are positions where if a guy doesn't do his job, then it's not necessarily a backbreaker, right? Like maybe if a lineman doesn't do his job, what could be a 2-yard run turns into a 6-yard run. Right. Or 10-yard run or whatever. You know, a linebacker doesn't do his job. What could be a 5-yard run turns into a 15-yard run or whatever, right? But it's like, man, you got one corner who can't do his job and is just consistently getting picked on. I don't know that there's, I mean, maybe a safety, like maybe a bad safety, since we kind of watched that happen the last couple weeks. You know, maybe a bad safety can do that to you too. But force me to pick one spot where I'm like, you know, that person being your weakest link is probably the worst case scenario. It's having, I think, one of your corners, right? Because you can just get a safety. Yeah, you might give up a big play or something, take a bad angle, whatever. But if your corner can't do anything, I mean, it's just like free yards all the time, And then when you get, you know, you mix in the poor tackling, it's, you know, then you get what we got on Saturday, which is, you know, these huge plays that are real, you know, backbreaking stuff. And, you know, I said it at the end of the game, and I try real hard not to really sort of kill, you know, these players. 'Cause I do remember that they are college students. They are, you know, young men. They are, not professionals as, you know, as we know. So I try real hard not to do that, but you know, if you're gonna do this, then you know, you're sort of open for criticism. And, you know, I didn't think it was too much of an overstatement to say that they lost this game because of Marcus Strong and because of, you know, Mike Leach's decisions to not be aggressive with his offense. And, you know, I know that, you know, people might disagree with that, but particularly the Leach thing, I think some people disagree about, you know, the fourth down decisions or whatever, but,
yep.
But Strong was so blatantly bad and his mistakes were so punished that I'm not sure how you can say, okay, if you had even just, you know, competent play out there, you know, I mean, how much would you say he was worth? Like negative 14 points, something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, because some of the,
in a game that you lost by four,
some of the yards after the catch are on the safeties. 'Cause there was definitely,
that is true.
Tackles and
that
stuff,
is true.
So that's not all. You can't be like, oh, he got burned by Ayuk and he got an 89 yard touchdown. Well,
true.
Part of it was that the safeties were a disaster in trying to bring him down and they just got
also
like, torched. But yeah, I would, you know, 14 sounds about right. Especially because how much ASU was focusing on that side of the field. Yeah. And then on top of that, you know, this was, probably their worst, performance against the run. Like Benjamin had been averaging 3.7 yards a carry. He 19 carries for 137 yards. Like they didn't, I mean, they pass the ball more than they run, which they don't typically do.
Right.
And so they were getting, I mean, they like there was, but the problem is like they would run on first and second, you know, quite a lot, first down quite a bit. Benjamin was never tackled for loss. And that hurts you because yeah, you'd feel like, okay, they're bottling him in, but he's still getting four.
Yeah.
Like that, because he is a tough guy to bring down for sure. But they were definitely kind of letting him slip out. It was taking four or five guys to bring him down generally.
Yeah.
And he definitely had a ton of yards after contact.
Yeah. Particularly in the second half. Like yeah. The second half was when it got bad.
Yep. But really, only 19 carries for him, which is not. We've seen him get a lot more carries than that.
Yep.
Because it just wasn't really necessary. Like it wasn't necessary for him to get that yardage. Sometimes, and there was times when they kind of ran the ball too much. And I think that's when you saw that Cougs were able to get some stops. Is maybe they ran the ball a couple times so that they put them in a third and short, and then then they were able to stop that.
Yep.
Yeah. So that was just all around. The defense was shredded pretty bad. It was like probably, I mean, it's not their worst. I would say UCLA is their worst performance of the year, but this is definitely up there. This is now Pac-12 play 67, 38, and 38 points.
Yeah.
And I, the points per possession are astronomical. Yeah, so this is, the defense is bad. Like, it's really bad. Like, it's the worst defense we've had in 5 years, so.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question, though, because I was kind of, I kind of threw this out there on our Slack channel, like, hey, what do you guys think of this idea? And the idea was that this was, granted that the overall stats look as bad or worse than, you know, really any other game other than UCLA. But, you know, do you buy the idea that maybe this was actually an improvement or a step in the right direction? And I don't know that, you know, you just from the, you know, the first few drives or whatever where they played okay. But the fact that, you know, there didn't seem to be just dudes running open all over the place like there was against Utah. Right. You know, it was really just these big plays that they couldn't figure out a way to stop that were really the problem, but that otherwise they were okay. I mean, you know, granted Benjamin racked up a bunch of yards in the second half and you know, that's true. But
I mean, you have to put it in the context, like ASU's offense is not good.
No, and that's true.
And they haven't been good.
And that's true.
Best performance of the year.
Yes, and that's Colorado, also true.
Colorado's offense defense is horrible.
But it doesn't, but I would say this, like it doesn't look as bad statistically if you, for example, let's say instead of giving up an 86 yard touchdown, they have to go 10 plays for that touchdown. You know what I mean? Like in the end, is it all that different? Maybe not, but you know, it's,
well, yes, it is because there was 2 minutes left and they maybe don't get that field goal.
So what I'm saying is like, okay, so if Marcus Strong or, you know, generic corner can make that tackle, right? You know, maybe that's, you know, everything looks really different. So, I don't know. Like, I feel like, and I know this is probably fool's gold. You know, this is probably just, you know, trying to talk myself into something. But it sure feels like if they can somehow figure out a way, because it feels like they were more sound than they had been, which is sort of your first step, right? Like don't have dudes running wide open all over the place. Like that's sort of your first step coming off that Utah game where it was like, I mean, Huntley could have thrown to four different guys on every play, you know, if he wanted to. So this feels like a step in that direction. And then of course the next step is, you know, how do you not give up, you know, the massive chunk plays, which was sort of Alex Grinch's big quandary when he showed up, right? Which is how do we stop these big plays? But I don't know, like, do you feel like this was a step in the right direction? Does it change your feeling at all? Even if it was, I don't know. That's a very open-ended thing, but.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, you sent out a tweet about how if in the first half there was some Seattle sports person who was talking about how the Seahawks were hanging in the game,
right?
Despite, you know, getting down early or whatever, and then that people will typically build that narrative, and then they'll have that narrative while ignoring like the missed opportunities and things like that.
Right.
So yeah, like you have this feeling that they were playing better, and yeah, I agree with you. It did seem like there were guys in spots that they needed to be. But again, the tackling was not good. That's just something that's like, has not improved throughout the season.
Yep.
And now you're playing better athletes and it's getting bad. And
right.
When you play guys like Ayuk and Benjamin, like and Jaden Daniels, like if you don't tackle them, you're going to get punished. But yeah, so yeah, I'm trying, like, yeah, it felt better, but also like I've seen, we know so many times that like teams can just play above, but you know, they can get a few plays can go their way.
Sure.
And suddenly, you know, for a half, it can look like things are all right.
Sure.
But really, like, after, you know, once they got that 86-yard touchdown, it was kind of there. The defense, I mean, they forced two punts after that in the remaining, I think, six or seven possessions, seven possessions or six maybe possessions. But the rest was three touchdowns and a field goal. And one of them was a field goal that came only because
of the clock. Time.
Like, yeah. They were definitely going to score a touchdown on that drive. Yeah. I think they kicked a field goal on second down. So like you're looking at if ASU had time, probably four touchdowns in six drives. Like, right. That's not good.
No, that's terrible.
That's
terrible.
Especially to an offense that had not been scoring anywhere right. near that rate the right. rest of the season. So, yeah, they are more sound, but then it kind of makes you like, holy crap. Or holy shit, where you got the E rating? Holy shit.
Go ahead and swear.
Even if they can be in the spots where they're supposed to be, they still get shredded. Like,
yeah.
They give up 500 yards, and at, you know, yards per play was at 9, I think, or 7.8, yeah. I'm sorry. So, yeah, they're getting shredded by an offense that was nowhere near 7.8 yeah. yards coming into this game.
Yep.
So that's where it's like, I don't know, man, that like, I feel like the defense is as bad as I thought it was going into yeah. this game.
So it doesn't make you think.
I mean, I predicted them to give up 28 points. So.
Yeah, I predicted 24. I was only off by two touchdowns. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Like, I kind of waffle back and forth between, you know, is this a step in the right direction or is it just, you know, whatever. I'm talking myself into something because I'm a fan and that's what I do. It did seem to me, and I don't know, maybe you can weigh in on whether it seemed this way to you. Did it seem like they were not rotating as many players as they typically do? Because if not, then that maybe could explain a little also in that, you know, some fatigue starts. I mean, I think Dallas Hobbs is an example. You know, he played what seemed to be a ton of snaps because that was something I was really trying to keep an eye on was how much he was playing, how much Alupatea Payee was playing, how much McDougal was playing, right? And it sure seemed like Hobbs was playing a lot.
Well, particularly early.
Yeah,
but I think he was. I think in the second half he probably didn't play as much.
Maybe. In general, it seemed, because I don't remember seeing Travion Brown a whole lot.
No.
Yeah. So I you know, it seemed to me that maybe they didn't rotate as heavily as they had been, which, you know, on the one hand is good if you're trying to like make sure you are assignment sound. On the other hand, not so good when it's 90 degrees, you know, in the middle of the afternoon in Arizona. So.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah. They kind of picked their guys and they went with them and, maybe if it was 60 degrees, that would sound a little better.
Well, 4 PM starting Pullman this weekend, ought to give a little more opportunity for that. So
yeah, I think it's about 45. Supposed to be about 45.
Yeah, it's going to be a gorgeous, very typical Colorado in Pullman game.
That's why I have the seats under the hood.
Anyway. Yeah, because you are a smart man.
Yeah, but yeah. Any other thoughts overall on the game?
You know,
well, I did want to kind of touch on real quick. Sorry, yeah. Cutting you. I asked you a question. Like,
no, please.
You know, sometimes you just got to get things out. So
yeah.
So I had a little thing. I'm a little frustrated with Leach, is that you and I have read before that his, you know, people see him as a guy that goes for it on fourth down a lot.
Oh yeah,
and so people kind of see it as a philosophy, but Leach says it's not really a philosophy. He just like looks at the situation and decides.
That's what he's. That's what he says.
But what we see is we've seen him burn timeouts, or end up getting delays of game or something, because he is sitting there thinking about it. And
right.
And he had to take that timeout before the field goal because it took him forever to figure out. And then they were rushing the field goal, and that's why Mazza missed the first one, is because they were like they were running out there with 10 seconds on the play clock to try to set up for a field goal because it took forever to decide because it was fourth and three that or fourth and six. I don't know what I would.
Yeah.
Whatever. They should have went for it. I don't care. Whatever, because you should have known your defense is going to give up a touchdown. But anyways, so but if if he had a philosophy about going for it on fourth down, then it'd just be like, well, it was kind of like when Chip Kelly was at Oregon, they would go for it. They almost always would go for it.
Yeah.
Like, so like the offense wouldn't even come off the field.
Right.
And well, that's the thing is our guys don't come off the field because they know there's a chance.
Right.
Like, it's not like, you know, some teams you just, you know, put your head down, head over the sideline. You know, you see our quarterbacks like look over like, come on, let me try to get it.
Yep.
And then they run off. So yeah, it's just like, you know what? If like, if you're going to be a guy that goes for it on fourth down, just say, hey, just know if in these situations I'm going for it, we're going to go for it. If you're sitting there and giving yourself like you have, let's say probably maybe 10 seconds to make that decision.
Right.
He's just taking longer than that.
So here's what I think is going on.
He's wasting timeouts.
That, yes.
You know, would be nice to have at the end of the game.
Yep.
And he's sometimes, you know, delay games, things like that.
Yep. So here's what I think is going on, because you're right. You're basically launching right into something that I already have put down a whole bunch of words about in my Monday column. So for people who read that and listen to the podcast, sorry, Riverhawk. It's basically, I think this, I think it's part of the vagaries of having a coach who is your offensive coordinator. So where, you know, if you've got an offensive coordinator calling the plays, and that is separate from your head coach, and the head coach is sort of constantly thinking about the game state, right? Like, what's the right decision, you know, and that offensive coordinator, the head coach that's not the offensive coordinator might be thinking, you know, two plays ahead. Okay. If we get to fourth and three from here, I'm either going to kick it or go for it. Like, so you can like that guy can think a little bit ahead and make that decision. Leach being your offensive coordinator means he's always thinking about the next play, right? What's the next play? What's the next play I'm going to call? What's our next thing for moving the ball? And then all of a sudden, you know, oh shit, it's fourth down, right? And I think this fits into a little bit with, again, you know, referencing the Connor Halliday podcast with the Coug Talk guys. He talks about how Halliday talks about how Leach is just sort of sometimes incredulous at the idea that, wait, it didn't work. Like,
right.
Like that's insane. You know, like this works. It works. If you just do it right, it works, you know? And so I don't think he really entertains the idea of fourth down until it's fourth down. And then when it's fourth down, he's sitting there and you see, you know, the paralysis in his eyes, right? Where, you know, the camera inevitably goes to him.
Mouth agape, looking up at the scoreboard.
And you just see him just standing there and you're like, oh my God, like, come on, you know? And I think literally he has not really thought about it until that moment. And right. Now all of a sudden it's fourth and three and he's like, well, shit, it's fourth and three. What do I do now? See, and the confounding part about this is exactly what you said. Like, you know, if you know, Chip Kelly, when he was at Oregon, right? We just go for it on fourth. That's just what we do. And Leach says, hey, if I think I can get it, we're going to go for it. That's obviously not true, right? Like, he makes decisions all the time that are
on game state. Absolutely.
Yes. You know, where he looks at game state and makes a decision based on the game state, like fourth and three from our own 38 with 2.5 minutes to go. It's like, look, if you didn't think we could get 3 damn yards, you know, I mean, come on, right? Like, we can get 3 yards. Now we're on our own 38. There's 2.5 minutes to go. He's thinking, if we don't get it, like a coach should. So I'm not gonna sit here and rip him for the decision per se, in the sense that, if you don't get it, and now they've got 38 yards to go get a touchdown, and they're 10 yards from field goal range. Okay. So I get, like, if that's the thing, I get it, but it's also like, yo, your defense is horrendous. Like don't fall into the trap of thinking your defense has played okay, and therefore you can punt it away and everything's going to be fine. Like, you know, you gotta like use your brain a little bit. And I just think that being the offensive coordinator and also being the head coach means that he's not thinking enough about that. And I'm not saying that's necessarily wrong or bad or something should be different or whatever. But it's like, you know, if you are concentrating on maximizing your offensive production, and then all of a sudden you have to flip a switch and be the guy who's supposed to maximize your team's, you know, win probability, like that's a tough switch to do. The only thing that confounds me about it is, yo, if you're the offensive coordinator, shouldn't you be just sort of like, you know, balls out for the offense? Like, shouldn't you just be like, yeah, we're going, I'm the offensive coordinator and fuck it, man, we're going for it. Like, shouldn't that be the stance? And that's the part that kind of drives me nuts. It's like, look, if you're the offensive coordinator and you think your offense is awesome, then just ride that. Then just be that and stop trying to like, I don't know, like, do I kick it or not? Like, just be like, you know what? Our offense is awesome and we're going to be great and ride that. And if you don't get it, you don't get it, but you know, be who you are and don't worry so much about the other stuff. So there, rant over.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, like what you're saying is, you know, if he's sitting there trying to be the head coach and offensive coordinator at the same time, he has to first decide, am I going to kick it or am I going to go for it? But he also has to decide what play he's going to run.
Right. If I'm going to go for it.
You know, like typically you have your offensive coordinator, you turn and look at him, we're going for it. What play are you running?
Right.
And the offensive coordinator already has that
play. Has already thought it through.
He's like, well, if coach says, yes, this is the play we're running. But Leach has to be like, okay, what's the down and distance? What play am I running now? You know, like, and so it's...
Exactly.
That's why we get the vacant stare look. And yeah, you know, it's... the Cougs definitely go for it on fourth more than other teams.
Yep.
And I like that. And a lot of that comes from like what he says. It's his belief that they can get for it. But it's the annoyance is where it comes from. Like you like you said, you really don't think we can get 3 yards. Like,
yep.
You must always think that they're gonna like because if his mentality is that every play should work, like this should work. This has worked for, you know, decades now. This should work. Then he should know he has a million plays that can get 3 yards.
Yep.
Like, and so. So yeah, I just want to rant on that a bit because
I kind of stole your rant though. Sorry. Yeah,
but I knew you had one, so I wanted to set you up.
I definitely had one.
So yeah, it definitely had a huge impact on this game. So I think it was a good time to bring it up, and yeah. So I just hope it's happened.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I just want to be clear.
A drive against UCLA, they were in were in UCLA territory, and they punted on like fourth and five.
And that didn't work out either.
That didn't work out either. So
you got to know your personnel. Like, that's the thing. Like, the strength of the team is the offense. And, you know, we joke about it, right? You made reference to the Seahawks. Like Danny O'Neill, who is a radio guy for ESPN Radio up here in Seattle. But it's like, you know, he said Pete Carroll coaches like he had the team he wishes he had versus the team he actually has. And it's like, that's so true of the Seahawks. And I think that's true of, you know, Mike Leach to some degree. It's like, yo, like the defense is trash. Like you have to coach, like your defense is going to give up a touchdown on every drive. Like, I think that's how you have to decide things. And I know that's hard for a coach. Like, I know that's not easy. And I know it doesn't come naturally, but I really think that that's how he has to coach. And, you know, when you're making a decision, do we go for it or do we punt? You know, you've got to make a decision that like, hey, if we don't get it and they've got the ball on our 40-yard line and they might score, well, okay, that's bad. But if we punt it, they might score anyway, because our defense is horrendous. And, you know, the coach has got to be mature enough to have that understanding. Like, he can't just be Pollyanna, like, oh, our defense is definitely going to make a play this time, even though they haven't, you know, every other time. It's like, you can't do that. You can't coach like that. You have to be aware of your team's strengths and weaknesses, and you have to coach to those things. And that might mean, you know, going for it in a spot where it might be a little uncomfortable versus, you know, punting it away when the game state might usually dictate that. Like punting it, like I don't have a problem with necessarily punting it on fourth and three in a vacuum, right? Fourth and three from your 38 with 2.5 minutes to go. Like in a vacuum, you're like, yeah, that's a punt. But it's like, this isn't a vacuum, you know, like your offense is really good. Your defense is terrible. Your defense has been hanging on by a thread for the first, you know, three out of the first four drives. Great. Let's try and like, you know, do what we can do with what the offense can do. And, you know, if you coach scared, you know, with this, you just can't coach this team the way you would coach a normal team. Like the defense is so bad. You have to assume they're going to give up a touchdown. And if they've gotten three drives without touchdowns, then you have to be like, blessed be, we have the advantage right now and we need to put our foot on the gas and take advantage of it because it's not going to stay that way. And you have to coach like that.
Yep.
Sorry, I just took you over again.
And of course, we are team never punt anyway.
Well, just in general, for sure.
In general, for sure. But also, Oskar Dragicevic had an amazing game.
He did. He
crushed it.
If only he played defense.
If, yeah.
But he did great.
Can he play corner?
Yeah.
He looks a little undersized, but maybe.
Yeah. I don't know how fast he is, but.
Yeah, so yeah. We're 3-3. Woo!
yeah.
You want to take a break, talk about some beer, maybe?
Sure.
Look at the rest of the season, see where this, sure. See where this thing is going.
Sure, I'd love to. All right, we're back.
All right, man.
Do I sound excited?
Yeah, so excited.
God damn it. You just said like, oh, we're 3-3. And I'm like, we're 0-3 in the Pac-12.
I know. Usually, if we're at this point, you know, in 2015, 2016, it means we just kicked a game or two in the non-conference. But we're sitting at like 3-0. And
right, exactly.
But no, we're 0-3 in the Pac-12. That's the most losses they've had. This ties for the most losses they've had in the last 4 years in conference.
Yeah, and it's. It's not going to stay that way, I don't think.
They're going to rattle off six. So, Jeff, what beer are you drinking?
All right. Well, hey.
Half drank. It's
mostly drank at this point. And this is probably why my rants are getting longer, because I am having the London Balling barley wine from Against the Grain Brewery in Kentucky. So the description here is, it says balls deep ! Big, ballsy, barmy, and barrel aged London Balling is not typical. It's a skirmish of flavor. The barrel imparts oak and vanilla mixed with the caramel sweetness from a malt bill with brick that'll knock your bloody bullocks around. Hey, bloke, fancy that? You'll be gobsmacked. So there we go. 12.5% alcohol by volume. And I'm almost done with my pint. So yes, that is probably why my rants are getting longer and more angry.
Pint, was it in like a 16-ounce
can
or something?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll tweet out the picture. But yeah, basically
I love a time where you can get 12% beers in 16-ounce single serving cans.
Yeah. So it's like the picture on it is like a cartoon drawing of like a erstwhile punk dude. With a mohawk who, he's got a tattoo on his arm that says balls deep, and he's got a patch on his vest that says malt. So yeah, there you go. It's pretty tasty. What I like about it is that it's not overly sweet, nor is it overly boozy. It's got, I think, just kind of a right amount of sweetness, which, cause sometimes, and I know you're much more of a barley wine connoisseur than I am, but some of the barley wines I've had have just been like overpoweringly sweet, almost kind of syrupy. And this is not like that. So yeah, it's very tasty.
Dude, that's a kick-ass review. I'm proud of you.
There you go.
Interesting. I of course look up your beer every time you get one. That is interesting.
Yeah.
That I haven't had. I haven't had that one.
Yeah. I haven't logged this one yet. So go ahead and start talking about yours and then I'll log mine.
Well, no, let me just, so yours, the one you're having, the London Balling, is, I'm curious, it's interesting, it's aged for nearly 3 months in barrels, in bourbon barrels, which is not that long.
Yeah, a lot of, that's like, pretty short amount of time.
Beers, you'll see like 9 to 18 months, sometimes 2 years, whatever. So yeah, you're probably not getting a ton of barrel. Angel's Envy, I mean, they're in Louisville, so they must get some access to some barrels.
You would think. You would definitely think.
I'm curious, is there any smoky element to that?
Not really. Yeah, not really.
Against the Grain is kind of famous for, they smoke almost, almost every one of their beers is smoked. And that's why.
Not really on this one.
That's good, because I usually don't drink hardly any of their beers, because like almost all of them are smoked. And I do not like smoked beers very much.
Well.
I might have to check that one out. I'm always looking to try barley wines, particularly ones aged in barrels. And wouldn't you know, Jeff, I am riding that malty train tonight as well.
Attaboy.
So what I am having is called Third Coast Old Ale. It's from Bell's Brewing in Comstock, Michigan. Bell's is one of the OGs of craft beer. They were actually formed in 1985. And they're still very relevant, which is impressive for a brewery that started then. They're most known for the Two-Hearted IPA, it's like a Midwest staple, a very caramel malt forward IPA, really classic Midwestern type IPA, kind of one of the defining, like there's so many of IPAs like it from Midwestern breweries because that beer is so influential, Two-Hearted. Third Coast Old Ale is just, it's like a 10%, big old, malty bomb of a beer. Old ales, kind of come from, old ales is kind of, came from, when they're an English style that, just like barley wine probably would have been called an old ale at times too, because it's just a beer that you could keep for a long time in a barrel or something, and drink it, you know, like for your, when you're not brewing, maybe in the months that you couldn't brew and it's too hot or too cold or whatever. So it's usually high alcohol, very malty. It's funny, this one's called old. So there's a reason I picked this. This beer was packaged on September 5th, 2014.
Ooh.
The provenance of this beer, a buddy of mine had went to the brewery that, like, so we had met at a conference in Ottawa, Canada, and I had driven there from where I lived in Vermont. It was about a 4-hour drive through Quebec, and we met there. Usually this guy, when we meet, we bring each other beers. So he had brought me a bunch of different Bell's beers. This might be the last one I have of that set. I would hope so. So I actually have had this beer since 2014 when I lived in Vermont. It moved across the country. The only beers that I sent across the country because we moved in the winter were beers of like 8% or higher that I knew wouldn't freeze. And so I drank the rest of my beers. So this one moved across the country with me from Vermont, and then of course moved from Olympia to Tacoma with me. So it has some dust on the bottle, like definitely some dust on the bottle. So I'll give you some singing now. There might be a little dust on the bottle. Don't let it fool you about what's inside. That's my girlfriend's favorite country song.
There you go.
It's a good country song. So this beer is, it says right on the bottle, an ale for those who appreciate complexity and vintage character. Fill a snifter and enjoy it now, or commit some bottles to the cellar to test your patience. Well, I tested my patience. 5 years. Okay, so
that's a long ass time, man.
So 2014, I of course had to pick because this is definitely the first time we've lost 3 Pac-12 games in a row since 2014. So I had to celebrate that with a beer from 2014. Anyway, so interesting thing about this beer, I'm glad I aged it. It has some hop character that's still hanging on. I bet the hops were super prevalent when it was, and I do not like these big hoppy malt bomb beers. Like the style is called American barley wine. When it's a really malty barley wine type beer and it's hoppy. And the funny thing is, they actually now brand this beer as an American barley wine. That's barley wines have now come more into the mainstream. But back in the day, breweries would make barley wines, but they didn't want to confuse people with like the wine connotation, and they would just name them old ales or strong ales or something like that. So you have a lot of these kind of like vintage beers that are barley wines, but they just didn't call them that because no one wanted to try a barley wine. But if you call it old ale or something, you know, it has a more of a attractive name. So yeah, this bottle from 2014 doesn't say anything about barley wine anywhere on it at all. But if you look at the new bottles, they say Third Coast Old Ale, American Barley Wine Ale, right on it. So a lot of this, I'm drinking it out of a glass from. Don't Drink Beer. It's a glass sold by Don't Drink Beer, which is a blog, and then he also has the podcast Malt Couture. So he has been a proponent of barley wines and has almost single-handedly, I swear to God, brought them into the mainstream. Barley Wine is Life, he has started. So now you see barley wines all the time, everywhere. So we have those now. This one is definitely nice. 5 years out, like it tastes nice. It's a little sweetness, a little hoppiness. Like it's very nice. Drinks pretty easy for 10%. I've been enjoying it as we've been talking about terrible things.
Beer makes things less terrible.
So yeah, I figured I'd bust out a 5-year-old beer, and I'm glad I did. Sometimes I get these beers that have been sitting there so long. I'm like, am I ever going to drink that beer? But yeah, so Bell's Brewing, they used to be kind of Midwest focused. I looked at their distribution map. They are in all of 39 states, like the full distribution, and they also distribute in Southern California. So 39 and a half states, and Puerto Rico as well. So they are quite a bit. Washington, Oregon cannot get it. Idaho, Montana, and Utah also cannot get it there. Oklahoma, Virginia. So those are the states. So no, you cannot rush out and go buy a Third Coast Old Ale if you're one of our Washington listeners. But if you're in any other state, go check it out and maybe don't drink it fresh. Just let it sit for a few years.
Maybe let it sit for 5 years.
Yeah, yeah. I actually read some. The kind of general idea with it is like it's got to be at least 3 years. And so this is same with like Bigfoot barley wine from Sierra Nevada, things that people always say, don't drink that beer fresh. It's just too hoppy, too out of control. But yeah, so Third Coast Old Ale, Bell's Brewing. We're all about the barley wines today, man. I didn't even know. We don't even talk about what beers.
We did not coordinate.
But I think when it comes to trying to get over or trying to deal with a loss like that and talk about it, we both went with strong.
That was pretty much it. That was pretty much it. Like I was thinking, I've had this barley wine sitting in my fridge for a few months, and I was like, okay, I'm going to drink it tonight, because I was like, I need alcohol.
Yeah. So you're probably going to need more. So looking at ASU, Utah, UCLA, we have those data points now. How have your prospects for the rest of the season changed? Obviously, those are all losses, and we expected at least one of them to be a win.
Yeah, at least.
We knew these other two were going to be tough. We expected at least one of those to be a win. So you would think we were thinking at worst you'd be 1-2 right now, 0-3. It makes as we talked about earlier, it makes that climb to bowl eligibility, which is not something we thought we'd have to worry about. Like after right. Houston, we weren't thinking there was going to be a sort of struggle. But yeah, so how has your outlook now changed? What do you think? Like what do you think is going to happen? We're halfway through the season.
Yeah.
Maybe let's kind of briefly, let's do it a little shorter. Go through our probability exercise for the
last
6 games of the year. Let's not. We know what these teams are. We know what the team is. We're not going to do all that analysis, so we'll do a rapid fire.
Yeah.
I'll get out a.
Are you going to take down the numbers?
Yeah. Let me pull up a doc here.
All right.
But yeah. So obviously. What are you thinking, starting with Colorado? What probability would you put on that?
So I think Colorado is like 60%. I still think that's, you know, pretty good. I mean, you know, if we go back to, and again, I know you said we didn't need analysis, but if that game on Saturday is played in Pullman, I think we probably win that game. So, yep. I think the home field advantage, you know, makes a difference against Colorado. So I'll go 60%.
Yeah, I'm that was exactly what I was thinking. I'm just going to copy you. 60%, absolutely. We'll talk about that more on Friday, so we won't get into it much here. So after that, we have Oregon. At Oregon, which we were a lot more confident about at the start of the season, just because WSU had beaten Oregon 4 times in a row, but they had also beaten Utah 4 times in a row. So what do we think? Where do you? I think you probably were at like 45% or 50% yeah. Before the season. Where are you at now?
Since I've had a beer, I'll be optimistic and say 15%.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go
10.
Yeah.
I mean, just because they're offensive talent, I'll give them, a fighter's chance. But
yeah, I think
10% is still, that's not insanity. But
no.
But yeah, so 10%. After that, we got another road game at Cal.
Yeah. That's a tough one because I don't think Cal's very good. Like, I don't think they're as good, but, you know, I mean, the Cal bullshit that always happens, and I'll go 40%.
Yeah, I actually, Cal's defense doesn't look as good as it was last year. There is the Cal bullshit, but I'm going to go 45%.
That's reasonable.
Ask me if we beat Colorado. Ask me after that. I'll probably raise it, but I'm going to go 45%. I'm totally doing the schedule from memory now. Cal and then Stanford isn't it, at home.
Stanford is it Stanford home. Or Oregon State? Yeah, I can't remember which first. Order. Okay, Stanford. Stanford. First, yeah. I'll go 50% on right. that one.
I'm a little like, more bullish. I'm going to go 55.
Yeah.
Oregon State.
I'm still going to go like 65% on that. All right. Like I know their offense is good. Sorry, that's probably too strong. Their offense is better and dangerous, but I still don't think that that's a team that should be able to hang with us at our place.
No. Yeah. I'm going 70%. Let's go 75. Let's throw it on there. And, Washington.
0%.
Yeah, even though Washington looks way worse.
Nah, 0%.
Yeah, I'm going 0. No chance. No chance. Okay, so let me do some math in my head real quick.
Are there 3 wins in there?
Let's see, Jeff. You have 1.15, 1.5.
Does it add up to 300%? I don't think so because I punted yours on the doesn't. Apple Cup.
Yours, you got 2. Okay, so I got 0.75, 1.15, 1.65,
2.3. That's it, huh?
Yep. You can't even. So I have 0.7, 0.0, we got the same, so 1.15, and then 1.7. And then 2.45. So nope, neither of us have
even with rounding.
Nope.
And this is where, like, okay, so I mean, this is the thing. I mean, people keep saying this on the comments or whatever, and it's totally true. It's like, this is where the UCLA game kills you, right? And where this
air four right now.
Yeah. And where, because all of a sudden you take what should have been like a 90% game and it's 0% because you lost. Right. Because I mean, once the game's over, it's binary. It's either 100 or zero. So, you know, you take what should have been a win and make it not a win. And then, you know, the Arizona State game feels the same way, right? Like, this is a game they very easily could have won, you know, circling back to what we talked about earlier. And, you know, so now there's, out of these three games, you know, two of them, you know, you got one you should have won, you got one you should have lost, and you got one that was a coin flip and it went against you. And it's like, and in the end, you ended up 0-3. Like, that's how teams end up missing bowl games is, you know, you go like, yeah, I think we're a bowl team. I think we're good enough. I think we are a 7 or 8 win team on talent. You know, I mean, you say all those things and then it's like, but you lost these games that you were either in control of or could have won. And, you know, and these things are riding on a blade where it's like, yeah, maybe, you know, if that fumble by the sideline, we end up recovering.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like karma is paying us back for last year is what it feels like. You know, I mean, we go back to the UCLA game. We put the ball on the ground 6 times and UCLA recovers every single, or 5 times, and UCLA recovers all of them. It's bananas. Like, we are just not, you know, I mean, sports fans don't like to talk about luck, but you and I, since we're statistically minded, we do. It's like, you know, I mean, we're like, we are not getting lucky this season. Like, we're not getting fortunate and we're paying for it at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's weird. I think that WSU is probably like a top 40 team.
I think so.
So you're looking at, if UCLA and Arizona State broke differently, they're definitely, you know, they're ranked and whatever, but that's when you're,
yeah, top, you're 5-1 and like a top 20 team.
Yeah. When you're like a 35 ish, you know, maybe on talent team, like, you can have a couple things break that way, a couple things break the other way. And like you said, there, it's breaking the other way. That gives me a little bit more optimism. You, like, it couldn't all have all been Gardner magic last year.
You'd like to think so,
but yeah. So, yeah, it gives me a little more optimism that they can get 3 and then maybe they can, like, you know, steal one at Cal if they don't, you know, or they could steal another one in there to make it a little less stressful.
Yeah. I do think it's entirely possible.
Because I think they're as good as team as Cal, and I think they're better than Colorado, and I think they're better than Stanford, and I think they're better than Oregon State. But yeah, they've just had some really, like, shitty luck. And then you also, when you look at our probabilities, that UW game, based on just the quality of the teams, we would normally give probably more of like a 20%, but because it's UW, you give it a 0. So maybe, but that would put us both into rounding up to 3. But that's the thing, is like, when you just have that game at the end of the year that you just know is not going to win, so really you're down to 5 games.
Right.
And then one of those is at the best team in the conference, and who's looking pretty damn good right now, and it's whose defense looks way improved.
Yeah.
So that suddenly becomes a game that maybe you thought maybe was definitely winnable at the start of the season, not so winnable anymore. And now, yeah. So yeah, I think we're not it's tons worse than the 2016 team or the 2017 team or the 2015 team, but this season so far has not broken their way, and they haven't gotten any luck with, like, not facing backup quarterbacks, which some of those teams had. So when you hit, like you said, when you're a 7-win team, you know, on paper, that means that's the median. So there's definitely some 5-win. While we were optimistic that we could get to the 9-win, maybe 8 or 9-win before the season, there's also some 5 wins in
I mean, that's well, and like whenever you like go look at these statistical analyses of how many games a team is going to win, there's always a range, you know, where it's like, okay, what's the probability, you know? And so whenever they predict, you know, wins, it's like, okay, what do they think is most likely? Right. And then, but then there's always these tails on both ends where it's like, okay, well, if everything breaks right, this team could end up over here. And if everything breaks wrong, this team can end up over here. And, you know, so a team that might be, you know, 7 or 8 wins on talent, you know, if some things break wrong, all of a sudden you're a 5 or a 4 win team. And it's not like it's totally impossible. It's just, it's improbable that you would do that. But, you know, we have a president who was improbable. Like, improbable does not mean impossible. And this team is starting to feel like the improbable, you know, 5-win team. And at this point, if they can get to 6, you know, we end up looking back at the season and going, boy, that was shitty. You know, should have beat UCLA, really could have beat ASU. Probably in the last 6 games, or probably be another game where we could go like, God, this team was like so close to winning 8 or 9 games, you know, because some seasons are just like that. What you really don't want is to get to the end of the year and just, you know, and have it be like that and not go to a bowl game. Like you want to go to that bowl game. You want, even if it's, you know, Vegas or El Paso or whatever, like you really want, you want that. Like you want that every year. And that's really important. And it's not like it's a program killer to not go to the Vegas Bowl, but it's like, you know, it matters. It matters to the players. It matters to the fans. And look, we have a non-zero number of fans that would consider a Vegas Bowl a total success. So
I will say if WSU ends up at 6-6, they're not going to the Vegas Bowl. They're going to be out of the regular pecking order.
Probably.
Like that, because with a 3-6 conference record, they'll be,
you know, probably
in like Memphis or.
Yeah, it depends on what goes on around them, but yeah.
But I don't know. I doubt you can find a 3-6 squad that was in the actual conference.
Well, they don't. I mean, they don't pick bowl games based on conference record. It's on overall record. So.
No, that's true.
Yeah. So I don't know. Anyway, it's. Yeah. Anyway, you know, whatever. It's. Yeah. Feel good about 6-6 if we can get there at this point, because you know you've already kicked, you definitely have kicked away one game you should have won, and there's another game that you easily could have won. You know, if you can still get to 6 after that, then you feel all right. So that's kind of where I'm at. You know, if we can just get to 6, great. You know, I don't think I would, if we won the 3 home games and lost the 3 road games, I don't think that I would feel, I think I would feel pretty okay about the way the season played out, because it's pretty clear at this point the team's not what we thought it was heading into the year. And at some point you readjust your expectations and say, okay, you know, they're not what we thought. They're not what we were hoping for. And so, you know, to continue to hold on to those expectations seems silly. So.
Right. Well, hopefully next week we can be a little happier. Turn one of those 60% on our list into 100%.
Into a 100.
And then that makes the math a little better going
forward. Yeah, it does.
Thank you for listening. Please subscribe if you are not subscribing. If you are subscribing, please rate and give us 5 stars and
leave a comment. Do that. Leave
comments. If you have any questions or comments, podcast versus everyone at gmail.com or on Twitter at pod versus everyone or at the Craig Powers. You can always send us comments or questions or whatever. Subscribe, rate us 5 stars, do all that.
Yeah. And when Craig says that we like the reviews, we really do. I'm trying to pull up a review right now, 'cause we do like them. Hold on. Now I'm doing bad radio here. Coug Center. Good work, Jeff. Hang on. I'm getting there. All right. So, we got 41 reviews, 5 stars, And 39 of those are five stars. The last one that was on here was September 18th, which frankly was a long time ago. So we need your help, people. Said a great, so this is from Valhalla VIP, who I think is actually a commenter on our site too. A great Wazoo focused podcast for those of us who hold WSU and Pullman so dear, but also fair analytics for the sports geeks out there like myself. Mix in a little bit fun beer talk and other topics and you have an enjoyable hour plus on a weekly basis. That is the kind of review that we are looking for, because that is awesome.
Yes. I do like this one. Really entertaining and insightful Cougs podcast. Jeff and Craig are awesome. Thank you, D from BG.
D from BG.
I'm going to show one to my dad. He'll be so proud.
Dude, we are awesome. I feel good going into my work week now. Someone called me awesome.
You subscribe. You also get the Kook Center Hour on Wednesdays.
Yes.
So we get
the dulcet tones of Michael Preston.
Golden Throat, as we call him.
Yes, as we like to call him.
And then also you can get our previews on Friday. So three podcasts to fill up
your... That's right. Three per week for the price of one free subscription.
No Patreon.
Do you like how I did that? All right, Craig.
Well, hopefully this is three too many losing weeks in a row. I'm really hoping we can get back.
Basketball's coming soon.
Woo!
It's right around the corner.
All right, man.
All right, dude. Go Cougs, Craig.